G'day everybody, and welcome to the Draft Doctors. I'm Jono here, and today we are talking our NFI show. And if you're wondering what that is, it's our no fucking idea. We're going to talk about some situations and players who we've got no idea who to rank in the upcoming season, whether they've had a club change, a role change, or even positional change. So just those players who we don't know. We're not gurus here, we don't know everything, but we claim to, and maybe the statesman a little bit later will proclaim that he does know everything, even though he doesn't from time to time. And we'll look at a few situations at club level as well, like the ruck situation we've got there with Melbourne. You've got two rucks there in Gorn and Proust. That's going to affect the rankings, and also maybe the Essendon midfield as well, who gets the bump and who gets the drop. No Stevie Fizz again this week, apparently. They're still having trouble with the rat on the wheel, the hamster on the wheel, connecting the internet. So up and running, hopefully by this weekend as well. So it's up to me to edit the show. Now we've already had the F-bomb, so let's see how many more we can get in there for the listeners. And we welcome to you, Statesman. How are you?
Yeah, I've got no fucking idea why I was asked on this show, to be honest.
Maybe for your salary cap knowledge?
No, of course. There's so many things that we try to plan. We have a lot of ideas. But it's funny with the rule changes and, of course, the amount of players that change clubs this year, there's a lot of question marks. And that's what we'll be discussing tonight, the question marks and a couple of things that we can't put firmly in our minds of how things are going to pan out.
Exactly right. And we welcome to you, Cam McLaughlin.
Yeah, g'day guys. The whole idea of an NFI show puts me at just a top tier amount of unease. I'm one of those guys who gets really uncomfortable when I don't know what the answer is or when I don't know something. And you know what? Historically, I get very uneasy by sources. So I'd basically have a junior burger back in the day with just the bun and the meat and no sauce because I didn't know what it would taste like. And so I'd just go, you know, take everything off that I have no idea about, and that'll make me feel a little bit easier. And then same with KFC. I'd basically just have a fillet burger with no mayo and no lettuce, because I was afraid of what lettuce would taste like. So this show, it just makes me uneasy, as uneasy as Statesman's November or Movember moustache that I'm looking at right now. It's I wouldn't say it's majestic, but I certainly wouldn't say it's not majestic.
I wouldn't even call it a moustache. It's just a little bit of bum fluff at the moment, isn't it?
It's really rough to look at. I don't know if it... I think he might have frozen and dropped out of this call, but at the same time, I'm left with this putrid thing on my screen, so thank you very much, Statesman.
That's all right, but we'll kick on to the show anyway. We'll start it off with our situations first, and Cam, why don't you kick us off with your first situation?
Yeah, so mine's the curious case of Richmond. Basically, Richmond in 2018... I have to admit that I didn't actually watch a whole bunch of Richmond in 2018 because the story's the same regardless of what game you watch. They basically win every week and they do it quite convincingly and they do it through a whole bunch of pressure and a whole bunch of just very silky play. But the thing that had me perplexed and what I was looking into a lot more over the last couple of weeks is, well, how aren't they scoring? I feel like they should be scoring a lot more in the fantasy realm because generally high-performing teams have it tied to them high-performing fantasy scorers. And so I did what anyone else would do when they didn't actually watch the games. I looked at the stats. Let me set the scene, and they're the third lowest fantasy scoring team over 2018. And they had one player, averaging over 90, with Dusty going a smidge over 92. I tried to come up with a few theories. The way I do it is, what's my hypothesis as to why they're performing so badly or why they potentially are not scoring so well in fantasy? And my first thing to go to was, Maybe they played a low disposal, highly efficient game, right? No, 100% wrong. So they were 6th in the comp for total disposals, 13th in the comp for disposal efficiency, and 3rd highest amount of clangers in the comp. So my next one was like, well, maybe they're actually just dominating clearances. Also a no. So they were 12th in the league for clearances. And so at this point, I started to get a little bit frustrated. Usually the data tells a story that, is quite evocative, or usually one of my hypotheses would ring true at this point, and I just couldn't get it to tell the story that I wanted to tell. And then I had a look at their inside 50s, and their inside 50 marks, and well, they're both second in the league, right? So they're getting the ball in there, and they're marking the ball in there. Then I think I have the answer, right? So it's basically an unrelenting forward pressure that keeps it within the arc. And maybe the ball gets slightly outside the arc and the kick takes it in and someone marks it and they kick a goal. But then I look at tackles and no, they're 14th in the league for tackles across the entire season. And I dug around a little bit more and the best I could do from a stats perspective was a higher ratio of handballs to kicks than any other team in the comp. But even still, if we take the gap between highest kicking team in the comp, the Eagles, and give the Tigers the same amount of kicks per game, it's an extra 60 fantasy points to spread across the entire team, which still leaves them 12th for total points. Add to this, they got blown out of the water by the Pies in the finals, and it really just complicates things further, right? So I don't have a really good answer for why they're scoring so poorly. And they got blown out of the water in the finals, and all of a sudden I'm looking at, well, then what do they actually do next? Because every single coach in the comp is going to look at how the Pies blew them out of the water with their current game plan. And so they're going to have to change things up in 2019. And it just leaves me thinking, well, as far as especially the midfielders go, how do you rank them? Like, where do you actually put these guys when they couldn't go 90-plus in a high-possession game? It was such a furphy that it was a low-possession game in 2019. They were getting the possessions. Basically, Dusty, Cochin, all of those goons, where do you put them? And for me, it's I have no idea.
When you were talking about how they didn't score as well, my first thought was that they shared the ball around as well, and that's why they didn't score as much, except for Dusty Martin, who's an out-and-out star. But when you said that that was irrelevant, it blew my mind as why they are not a fantasy-relevant scoring team, especially seeing as they've been up the top of the ladder for the last 2 years. So, yeah, I've got NFI, except for probably Dusty in that team, who would probably rank, he'd have to be in your top 20 midfielders easily, having an out-and-out year the previous year, then, yeah, I've got no idea on how to rank the Richmond players.
So, and just to throw it a little bit further out, I just don't... Dusty may even be my main Richmond NFI. Like, he's another year older, so it puts him at about 30 at the start of the year.
Not that old, he's only 27.
27?
Yeah, Dusty's not 30. He's younger than Cochin.
Is that right? Sorry. I'm a few pints deep and everyone just looks a little bit older. And maybe it's just because Statesman's got a moustache. I can't tell. He looks about, 60 at the moment. It's probably going to come back to haunt me when I fall on my sword for George Holland Smith, but I'll leave it for now. But I just don't quite understand how they, in the stats, don't look like they're missing fantasy points. But then when you look at the overall fantasy score, they're 100% missing the mark.
Well, that will certainly have to change with Handsome Tom arriving at the club. He'll need quick ball movement as well. They've got to find a balance between quick ball movement and that pressure game that we saw the last couple of years. Otherwise, he's going to be also irrelevant when it comes to fantasy football and not the price tag that the Tigers paid for him.
Correct.
Your thoughts, Statesman?
Yes, I have no idea.
It's Looks like we're all going to be in the same boat on this one. My situation is the Port Adelaide Football Club. Now, when you look at their... I'm going to start off with their midfield. They've got their mainstays in that midfield, you think, this year are going to be Bogue, Ebert, Gray, Motlop, Power Pepper, Rockcliffe, Wines, and you'll say Westhoff as well. The youngest one in that midfield is Power Pepper at 21 years of age. The rest are all around the 29, 30-plus mark. So they have peaked and done their dash in terms of scoring. You add to that when you've got your most, we'll call, dynamic X-factor player in Chad Wingard traded to the Hawks, they're going to be a pretty much a one-dimensional, one-paced midfield attack this year. Now, at the time of recording this, there was an article today with Michael Voss saying they're going to be more prolific through that midfield, but I have got no idea who those players are going to be to spark that X-factor, because it sure as hell isn't going to be Jack Watts or Justin Westhoff at the age of 32 who's had a career year. And you look at their times on ground, they've only had two blokes over 80% or 80% or above with the time on ground. So with these new rules, I've got no effing idea how that situation is going to play out. Do they get more time on ground now because of the starting positions? But that's only for after a goal's kicked, and they only average 75 points a game this year. So they're not kicking a lot of goals, and something's got to be done about that this year for me. So I've got no effing idea on how to rank these Port Adelaide midfielders this year for me.
It might have been out of their control, but I saw Port Adelaide had too much inside grunt and maybe not enough outside run. They lost their outside runners, so I'm a little bit unsure how the too many inside players actually get more game time if the majority are still there. Data would suggest that Wingard was a good clearance player, so therefore he plays an inside and outside role. I'm a little bit lost and probably hesitant for the Port players. I've been hot on Ollie Wines, but only 32 minutes of average playing time. You're just never going to get a good score out of him.
No, that's right. 90 to 95 at best, you would think. The only one I've got high hopes for is Sam Pepper, who averaged 75% this year and can always go up, and he's 21 years of age.
I like that you've gone out on a limb and picked one, because for me, Port is just a... I have really no fucking idea. And if I was going to pick one, it would actually be to back in Rockcliffe. So who's going to actually be the longer time on ground, the accumulator? I reckon it's Rockcliffe next year, but that's also probably a fool's errand. No idea.
Well, if Rocky's body's right, he was always around that 83% time on ground at the Brisbane Lions, but he's 29 in next year as well, so does the body hold up? And there's just so many questions to that whole team. You've got the Lysette-Ryder combination, their forward line. Charlie Dixon, if he goes down, do they leave Westhoff as the tall marking option? Lysette can pinch hit it, and you look at their defenders, there's big question marks on the defenders as well, which we'll get to a little bit later on. But yeah, big question marks, and I've got no fucking idea about the Port Adelaide team for next year. Statesman, what have you got no effing idea about for next year in your situation?
Yeah, a lot of things, to be honest, mate. Where I'm heading in life. but in footy, mine's the Gold Coast 22. And it's more to the point is, who's actually in their 22? There's a lot of players gone, 16 in total delisted. That's a third of your squad. That's quite remarkable. I know we've had some big turnovers before, but I'm not quite sure we've had any this big. So just thought I'd rattle through a few names. If remember through the trade period, they were after a couple of senior bodies through the midfield. They delisted Michael Barlow. It's a senior body that you could run through the midfield. Aaron Hall was traded. I think that was a bit player-driven, but they could never give him game. So even when he was playing well, they seemed to find a reason to drop him. Kay Kolodziejczyk, was traded and was actually steak knives, to be fair. And this was a hotly touted player, first round draft pick, if I'm not incorrect. I think he was late first round, but I think he was around that mark. My mind's got set on pick 16 off the top of my head. Jack Leslie, who was a decent, solid player. Jesse Lonergan, another experienced, harder midfielder, got delisted. It's an interesting one, that. Tom Lynch, one of their captains. Another captain, Stephen May. Jared Lyons actually just got freed up for nothing to go to Brisbane.
Had a year left on his contract.
Experienced, hard-headed midfielder. Obviously what they were searching for during that trade period. Michael Riscatelli.
He's dead. He's
but,
come on.
But played nearly every game this year.
Mainly in the back line.
Yeah, I know, but this is what I'm saying. My thing is, who's in the best 22? Because I keep rattling off these names and I'm going, well, they were or would have been. Matt Rosa, yes, he's getting on a little bit, but Brad Shear, Scrimshaw. Spencer Wigg. Wigg.
Wigg, yeah. I heard he was going to get picked up again, though.
By Brisbane? On a 6-6-6. Oh, right. I was just waiting for the 6-year contract somewhere else. They're at $800,000. I don't know. There you go. Have another one. The mini Rory Sloane. That's what he looked like in those pre-season games for Adelaide. It just looked like he was another hard at it midfielder. So it was interesting. And Mackenzie Willis went as well. So I go, that's probably, out of those 16, there was probably 8 of those that were easily best 22. And there's probably another 2 or 3 that should have been best 22. Now, we don't know all the circumstances. We don't know the characters, their dedication to training, all those little fiddly things we don't know. But what I also don't know is who's actually going to be lining up in their first team next year. And there's some players they've picked up that I'll go, oh, I don't know if they're in the best 22 in any other team. So are they guaranteed? One thing we know, there's going to be some major bargains at Gold Coast. So late, deep in the draft, you're going to pick up players. They're going to play 22 games and average quite well. The problem is we've got no fucking idea who they are.
Do you reckon they're going to score well? Because they're going to be running kids and they're going to get smashed.
Yeah, but players like Jack Bowles, he's in for... I mean, I look at that and go, well, if you're going to go this way, yeah, you're bringing in a couple of senior bods to help them along, but aren't you backing these blokes in? So if he's got defender status and plays 70% midfield, he's going to rack up brilliant defender score.
Well, if he's got defender status, then yes.
And Jack Bowe is actually one of the reasons why they moved Jared Lyons on. So they basically said that they're both very similar players, and one is, you know, a 15th of the salary, and moved Jared Lyons on.
Was he too cheap?
Yeah, they just want to... Oh, jeez. Like your moustache.
For a good cause.
It certainly is. And Steve, he's not on the show with us today, but he did send through... his situation and his, like a lot of people's minds, is the Collingwood midfield. Who's going to take the hit? Who's going to get the bump? I think we mentioned it on last week's pod. Steve thinks that Sidebottom might be the one that's pushed out of that midfield, considering he has gone forward before. But I've got a feeling it might be Mr. Dependlebury, and he will be used as a bit of a pinch hitting role, forward, back, or just wherever he's needed next year. That's how I'm reading it.
As stated by the Statesman only 2 years ago, he was on his way out.
Yeah, a couple of years too late, but you'll still claim it, won't you?
Absolutely.
Indeed. we're moving on now to a bit of a player focus who we've got no idea about where we're going to rate these guys for next year. And why don't you kick us off, Cam, with who you've got there?
Kick us off, Cam, is probably about the right way to put it, because kick us off, Christian Salem with his left boot. So on face value, this is a guy who should do better with the rule changes. So he generally gets a run through the midfield and he takes kick-ins. 25% of Melbourne's in 2018, give or take a few percent. And he'll be listed as a defender. He'll 100% keep his defender status through 2019, which puts him right in the frame for your selection for defender 3 or 4, right? That seems quite solid and quite certain, which is unfortunately not what the show is called, certainties. But when you look at the Demons and who they actually picked up in Collar Jasny, Stephen May was the main kick-in for the Suns in 2018. I know he's a massive guy. He's a massive unit. And so he's probably not going to be the kick-in because they've got other options. But Colo's also been known to do that for the Suns as well. And then you look at also Hibbard and Lewis, and you have about five players who could realistically be that main kick-in player. And if we're looking at defenders who are going to be the main kick-in as being the biggest risers and potential bargains for 2019 draft, I start to think, well, maybe that's a little bit too many question marks to have him as a certainty for that position. I'm generally a pretty big rap on Christian Salem, but until we know how Melbourne's actually going to deploy their defence, I have no fucking idea. Like, if he isn't the main kick-in, I can't justify picking him up. His work on the follow leaves a lot to be desired. He's a bit slow. He's under pressure. He can often make the wrong decisions and try and be a little bit too cute with the ball. And he isn't naturally a big guy. The other thing to look at is how he actually performs from defence. And he's exemplary. Like, he's very good when you give him a little bit of time to think about where he needs to kick the ball, and then he drops the left boot in, and he generally hits a target. He's very, very, very good at it. But if he's not that guy coming out of defence, I can't pick him, but I want to pick him because I think he should be that guy. Anyway, NFI. Thoughts?
I am not taking Christian Salem for anything next year. He's just going to be a bit player, I think, in that team. Unless he's dead to me. Unless Geordie Lewis somehow calls time in the first couple of rounds, there's no way I'm touching Christian Salem, especially when you've got a bloke like Colo there who plays exactly the same role. You've got Garlett. Was it Garlett or Jetta in the back line there? Who has got the speed, so Salem's just going to be a bit player in that team if he makes the 22.
All I can say is this is one of the few things I like about our own show. The Draft Doctors, even Christian Salem is relevant.
Not next year, he's not. Not for me.
you definitely sound like you have an idea.
You might have no idea, Cam, but I'm locked on. I've got no interest in him whatsoever next year.
Yes. and I will say he was a great find this year. Or was it last year that he was a great find in draft? Last year. So, look, he has played important roles before. It's an interesting one, especially with KK, of what the eventual defender mix is going to be at Melbourne, because they've got a lot more options now than they've had previously. And it was, I felt differently than the club. I honestly believed that keeping Hogan was more important than getting Stephen May because you had Tom McDonald. So I always thinking that Tom McDonald could be that. I thought he was a revelation as a backman. And he's proved that, you know, he can play forward quite well. But
they got Jakey Lever to offset that Tommy Mack role. And Sam Frost has stood up this year as well.
Yeah, but I think when it was, I think Sam May become hugely more important when they went missing in the key defensive posts come finals time. So I think that, and it might be a couple of things, just it can be a bad day for people. Your midfield's not putting enough pressure on. You've got, you know, one of your key men out in Jakey Lever, as they did. So you can, sometimes you can overreact because you're looking at solving that one problem. If that problem was fixed, we could have won that game. We could have won the premiership. But they, let's face it, they ran into a pretty hot West Coast Eagles that day, didn't they?
They certainly did. Certainly did. The player I've got no effing idea on who to rank next year is Ryan Burton, who was recently traded to the Port Adelaide Football Club. And when you look at Port Adelaide's defence, they've actually got a pretty settled defence back there. You've got Riley Bonner, DBJ, Houston, Howard. Leonard stood up in the second half of the year and actually played some pretty good footy and was actually fantasy relevant as well. They've brought in Sam Mays from the Brisbane line as well. You got the super boot, Trent McKenzie, who probably won't get a game. And you had a couple of blokes who were injured throughout the most of the year in Hamish Hartlett, who did his ACL, and Steve's favourite player in Matty Broadbent.
Everyone's so, favourite player.
I know. Yeah, exactly right. I don't know how Steve doesn't like him. So my question is, where the hell is Ryan Burton lining up for the Port Adelaide Football Club in 2018? We saw him play that intercepting role in 2017 where he was, what, second in the NAB Rising Star, averaged 84 in both formats. And then in 2018, he was given a actual role to play and he's... Which we don't like it when coaches give players actual roles to play in defence, and Burton's average dropped down to 62 in AFL Fantasy and 65 in Supercoach, which is basically unrosterable. And his ADP was 83 in 2018, guys, so you would have picked him up in the 9th or 8th to 10th round expecting him to be D3 material and would have been burnt quite severely, so... When looking at the Port Adelaide team, they've got Dixon there, Watts, that's probably the, they'll probably use Lysette as the second tall, but Burton's a pretty good mark, so I could see them using him as the second tall in that forward line, which is, when you've got a one-paced inside midfield team, how well they're going to get that ball inside 50 without the run of Pollock and Wingard there in that team, so... I've just got no fucking idea of what to do with Ryan Burton next year because he could be great or he could burn you.
I mean, isn't he maybe the new Pollock anyway? That's my thing. So I reckon he might fill that void. And if he does, it's, you know, he's going into a new position. He's third-year player. You're not going to expect the world from him. Pollock was amazing this year. Like, you would have picked him up pretty late in draft. He's probably not going to hit those heights, but he could be dependable. You know, a ninth, maybe. As a defender, though.
But that's the thing, he will have defender status, and if he's playing the Pollock role and getting you 85s, then it's a win, but, yeah. But, yeah, I've just got no idea where to put him for 2019. No idea.
Yeah, he's a very talented player. I think the plan somewhere along the line was that he was to become a midfielder. Now, whether that actually still happens or not is a big question. There's no doubts about that. I think Port desperately need the outside run. I think he's a great user of footy. So I'm thinking more than anything else that the Cam is right. He is the he'll replace Pollack's role. I wouldn't call him Scott Pendlebury or the new Pollack either way, but that's fine. We all have our thoughts.
Fair enough, indeed. And who have you got there for your player that you've got no effing idea about?
Mine is Jack Riewoldt. Now, I will say, being a fellow Tasmanian, I need to speak very highly of our own Hall of Famer, of course. He had his best fantasy year, and for good reason. He was the only key forward in the best team of the competition. We know they didn't win the premiership, but the home and away they finished clearly on top of the table. But will he now all of a sudden be the second target and therefore be starved of opportunities? Or on the flip side, will he actually get the second best defender rather than the best defender and be actually freed up? Also, who will be the one that's going to be staying within the 30, 40 metres of goal and the new structure, and who's the one that's going to be able to run up the ground and get those marks, good personality, Tom Lynch style? So there's a lot of questions here which I honestly do not know the answer to. And I don't think JLT will actually let us know, because I reckon they'll be trialling a few different things to see what works. And I think it might even be match-up dependent. So if you've got a really good couple of closed-down defenders versus a Jeremy McGovern the following week, maybe your structure in the forward line changes on a week-to-week basis depending on what your opposition is. So my problem with Jack Riewoldt, although he had his best year, and I do believe Richmond, as long as they don't have a big run with injury, are going to be an even better team than they were the last 2 years, I don't know how that's going to impact him on the on the fantasy game. So no fucking idea in Jack Riewoldt.
Yeah, interesting points there. The only way I'm confident in Jack Riewoldt is if I'm handcuffing him with handsome Tom Lynch. So then, you know, if you do see a pattern early in the year, then you can rotate them in and out of your squad on the field or play both at the same time. But, yeah, I've got no idea, because I would have thought they would have kept handsome Tom in the goal square, let Jack go up. But we do know that Tom Lynch is one of the best contested marks going around and can kick a long wait, and we know Jack's a good contestant, Mark, so it's a lot of interesting times ahead for the Richmond Football Club, and especially in terms of fantasy.
And just to build on, I think, what Statesman was getting at then, in regards to, I think a lot of people are looking at the change in kick-out as a massive benefit for defenders. Actually, what they maybe need to be looking at is the chance for new contested marks for the forwards. So they might be then looking at a bit of an up in marks for someone like Jack Riewoldt and someone like handsome Tom Lynch. And I think I might have dropped out.
No.
Oh, brilliant! That's fantastic. So, I'll just leave it at that. So I actually think that people maybe need to think a little bit differently about where the points are going to come from, and actually we may see key forwards, as soon as the ball is rushed through for a behind, making their way to the 50-metre arc for that marking opportunity. And so Jack Riewoldt and handsome Tom Lynch may both see a boost anyway.
We've even got the 6-6-6 starting position. You could see handsome Tom pushed up the ground to get a mismatch. I don't know. If they're a forward, do they have to start in the forward line, or is it just has to be 6-6-6? Doesn't matter. So you could have handsome Tom in defence if you wanted. So
Oh, of course you could. Yeah, absolutely. Set up any way that you wish.
Yep.
Long as you got your 666, you're away.
Okay, yep. That's all right. No, that's just, I wasn't too sure if playing positions out of our fantasy way. If you're forward, you got to play forward, but that could be a tactic. They throw handsome Tom in defence, which we did see him do a little bit in his time at the Gold Coast Suns there.
Yeah, and it's going to be very interesting what type of tactics the coaches use with all of these new rules, because that's what we've got no idea about, is how these things are going to be managed. I can almost guarantee you there's things that are going to happen that we're not even considering right now.
I suppose that's why the JLT is going to be very important and got to be watched really closely as to how players set up. But even then, a lot of the time they're trialing things that don't actually happen in real game time throughout the season. And Steve's last player was actually Dusty Martin. He said his ranks would have suggested that he should have killed it this year from the previous year, but Statesman, as you've said before, once you have that career year, it generally means that you cannot back it up, and it proved that Dusty did it again, proved that he did do it this year by not being able to back up.
Very hard to repeat. Yeah, absolutely. It's never an easy thing to do. You're trying to repeat the best ever season that you've ever had, and not many can do that. And so it's the reality that you look at those type of players and go, congratulations, and you just need to take a bit of time to find out how they're going to react to their best year and whether they keep the same roles or whether they get pressure, more pressure from the opposition. So there's a lot of things that go into it, but, yeah, it's very hard to repeat.
Yeah, certainly is. We've actually had a few questions thrown to us this week. A lot of people have no idea themselves. A lot of the questions about the 666 rules. So, Cam, you got a few questions there. Why don't you fire away?
Yeah, thanks, mate. So I might start off with Adza08Elf. So he started with three questions. What Gold Coast Suns are doing and what the team looks like, which I think we've really covered on the pod. Collingwood midfield rotation, who gets squeezed. So we've talked a little bit about... So that was Fizz's, Stevie Fizz's NFI. Is anyone... Name one player. Jump on, don't sit in the fence. Name a player, guys. Who do you think gets squeezed?
Pendlebury.
Yep, Pendlebury.
Lock in Pendlebury for three.
And I say Pendlebury has reduced time. They will still use him through the midfield, and I think they'll use most of those players through the midfield, but I think he's the one most likely to be given other tasks.
Agreed. And his final question was the Frio forward line. Does Hogan play a Lynch high half forward wing role? And my going in perspective is that he plays the same role that he did at Melbourne, which is exactly, it's that role.
Yeah, we spoke about this a little bit last week where the Trick or Treat show where I had Jesse Hogan as my treat, where Frio, I think, are going to use Tabiner and Lobb as the main forwards there to let Jesse Hogan push up and play that high half forward wing role and give us some sweet, sweet fantasy scores, hopefully.
And just to prove that the other two have no fucking idea, I'm completely opposite. And the point I was making about Lobb last year, he's kicked two bags in his life. So if they want someone to put the score on the board, it's actually Jesse Hogan, and that's what Fremantle need to fix. So that's what they've got to do first. If it shows that there's more flexibility in that team, that might change. But the first things first, I've just picked up a full forward. I want him to kick a goal. Stand there, kick a goal.
Fair enough.
Mate, that makes far too much sense. The other one will be, so another person, you know, long-time listener, first-time caller, is Warndog, coach of the Warndogs, and he's got some specific questions for the Statesman to get his wisdom in regards to, yep, yes.
Oh, God. I've got, hold on, I can't share my wisdom to the man that makes the rules. He's got more wisdom than I will have in my left finger. I was going to say agate, but that would be incorrect language on the No Fucking Idea show, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I also feel that considering it's the No Fucking Idea show, that, you know, asking you for wisdom is a little bit rich. But but we'll go with... okay, so he wants to know, where does the kick-in end up? So it... Someone kicks in from, you know, 100 metres out, and it goes left, straight, middle, close, far. What do you reckon?
Well, I suppose at the end of the day, the question he's asking is if you've got the 10 meter mark, and you've also got the rules where you can run across the square, what does that achieve? Well, firstly, it achieves that it unpacks the zoning. So you can only zone with your players a certain amount of distance. So the more distance you try to cover, the more gaps you provide. So as long as clubs don't do the same thing every single time, then you can zone to match that. There is going to be more freedom that comes from the kickouts. Does that make sense?
It does. So what you're saying is that you don't know, and that it could go long, short, left, right, or forward.
Yeah, if you unpack it that way, Cam, but more what I'm saying is what it does is gets away from congested zoning models. So the recent footy has been dominated by forward pressure. So you get it in, you keep it in. This is going to make it easy to get out. And the only way you make it easy to get out is never doing the same thing all the time.
Yeah, good one. So it's actually going to stop the long bombs down the wings.
And give Carlton a chance to kick.
There'll be more variety. Yep, cool. His second question, because, you know, Warney's got a couple. Does the 666 do anything for A, the game in general, and B, for disposals? Oh, Jono, you're up.
For the game in general, I think it's a load of crap because they've changed the rucking rule where they don't get pinged for holding the ball, grabbing it out of the ruck. So Max Gawn, game's tight. You've got goals being kicked, 666. Max Gawn just grabs it out of the ruck, creates a ruck contest. Hello congestion, and hello getting people behind the ball to either save the match or win the match or however they need to set up, depending on what the situation is. So it's totally irrelevant, I think, the whole 666 setup, in my opinion. And disposals, well, again, you can factor in that same whole ruck situation, just grab it out of the ball, out of the air, and just create a ball up, and again, everyone can just run in, and so it'll be about the same, I think.
I disagree, but I don't think we can have strong opinions on this until we see it. So I think, in my understanding of what this will create, is that you don't have the automatic loosened defence. So if you do have a quick clearance, you're actually having one-on-one contests rather than two-on-one or three-on-one contests. Doesn't mean players can't roll off, but if you've got smart midfielders that can identify who would roll off and who they roll off to, then you can actually use that to your advantage anyway and pinch the second one. I think what it has the potential to do, and trust me, the point Jono was trying to make is people try and find a way to close it down, but that's why these rules are in place now, to stop them being closed down. But what it actually has, it enables quick attacking play. So if a team's down, I'll use Lee Matthews used to have a rule that if there's enough minutes, you can kick enough goals. It brings that back into play. So if you're 5 minutes to go, you can kick five. If you're within five, you can kick five. It brings that back into play.
Yeah, I agree. I think it was more just, I don't think a lot of the rucks will use that tactic all the time, especially if it's the first or second quarter. It's mainly more for end of the game type situations to change it up. And
they've got to get their hands on it first,
yeah,
though.
Yeah, well, that's true. But if Max Gawn's the best ruck when he's only going up against Grundy twice a year, so he will beat most people.
I'll tell you what, that's a fantastic segue for where do we rank Max Gawn? Warndog's final question.
NFI.
Yeah, it's a damn good question because we're all assuming with the trade period that he's sharing the ruck. We're all going through the same scenario that we went with Brody Grundy last year. Look how that panned out. Let's wait till we view it and see.
Yeah.
because we were wrong on Brody Grundy.
I think he maybe gets a discount going into 2019. He might be a second round pick. But I feel like you'll get a bargain if you get him at second round.
I think second round's fair.
And then finally...
Thanks to Warning. That's a great question.
Yeah, ripper questions, mate. The final one is from Arlen Kayser, and I reckon we might all be agreed on this, so we may have some idea, which is, you know, quite good for this podcast. Arlen Kayser on Twitter asks, what's the Western Bulldogs ruck situation?
Timmy English and Trengrove? Tom Boyd, if he's mentally health fit-wise? You're probably your three options.
I think you've got to go English. Got to go English, don't you? He's going to be one of the better ruckmen in the competition. It's his third season. He's had a little bit of taste. I think he had some pretty good form at the beginning of this year, to be fair. So I prefer they back him in, but I'm thinking of a football long-term rather than probably trying to win as many games right now.
Centimetres will be perfect for the new 666 rules. He's like another midfielder. He can get around the ground. His VFL was actually pretty good as well, but it's just Luke Beveridge doesn't like designated ruckman.
Yeah, I'd say it's going to... I think Jono's going to be right, considering he knows, you know, 100% about what the Bulldogs do, and no one else really cares. And that's...
No.
That's about all for the questions, guys.
No worries, and I think that wraps up the show for this week. Thank you very much for listening, and Staceman, you need to do something about the fuzz on their face. I don't know if just get some texture or something, because it is truly horrendous.
Thanks for your support.
But it is a great cause, so well done.
Throw
the Movember challenge.
Mate, make sure you throw the link to your page up on Twitter. I'll send you a box of cookies or whatever gets it done these days.
Money donations.
Will do.
Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.